coming in as Lube. Hewitt-Dyke centered it. And that scores! Andy McDonald!
And over at that Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flame.
Here goes, put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, we are underway. It is Thursday, June 27th, and welcome to this hour of Flames Talk, and welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. When it comes to your business, knowing your property secure is better than wondering who's getting in. Get peace of mind at CalgaryLockandSafe.com. It's Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, or wherever you get your podcasts, live from Las Vegas. And the 2024 NHL draft. What's going on, Vix?
I am staying air-conditioned, pal, because that's the best approach to take when you're in Vegas in late June.
It certainly is. It is ridiculously hot here, but doesn't really matter. It's the draft. It's draft week. Having a lot of fun, and we've got lots to get to this hour, a lot to dive into this hour on the program. And, you know, the Flames are now, as we're talking right now, a little more than 24 hours away from getting to round number one of the 2024 NHL draft. And, you know, it really is one of the most important days that we've had in this city and the Flames have had in a long, long time. Like this, from an organizational standpoint, in terms of what's coming down the pipe and what they're trying to do, you know, this is probably the most important draft they've had since, what, 2014, 2016? Those would be the two that come to mind. They had the 4th overall pick in 2014, the 6th overall pick in 2016.
Well, and even if you want to go back to 2013 when they selected Sean Monahan at number 6 overall, but also had two more first-round picks in Morgan Klimchuk and Emil Poirier that just didn't necessarily pan out for the team, that was an important one as well. But this one, to me, really feels like that first domino to be knocked over in terms of setting the trajectory and setting the course of the Calgary Flames for the next decade, with the number of first round picks having multiple, having number 9 and number 28, having 2 in the 2nd, 2 in the 3rd, 2 in the 4th. This is going to be a draft that the Calgary Flames will either look back on and say, yes, this set us on the right course, or maybe have a little discomfort looking at it 5 or 10 years down the road, depending on how the picks and the players play out. It's that critical, that important to where the Flames are as it stands today.
Well, let's start off this hour by hearing from the general manager, Craig Conroy. He spoke to the media. We heard that as part of our first hour on this Thursday edition of Flames Talk, but had a chance to chat with him before he spoke to the media at large, had a chance to sit down with them at their team hotel and just go through a whole bunch of things. They've got 2 picks in the first round. They've got, you know, all these people talking about moving up, moving down. They've got free agency coming up on Monday and a whole lot more. Let's hear from Craig Conroy. I had a chance to chat with him, a little exclusive sit down here at the draft in Las Vegas.
How's the list? Like, are you feeling like it's pretty much set going into this weekend?
Yeah, we're dialed right down. I mean, I think we'll meet in the suite a little bit tonight to fine tune it a little bit, but very comfortable where we're at and looking forward to getting to the draft tomorrow.
So what type of player, like, you don't know who you're going to get at number 9 because you have no idea how the 6 or 7 before you go. But, like, what type of player are you expecting to be there at 9?
Well, we really like our list probably right up to 11. You know, I think we have a kind of blocked off really tight list where we're like, okay, these are – don't know who's going to be there because obviously you're picking 9 out of 11. There can be a lot of – but we really feel like that's an area where we're very comfortable with going to get a very good player.
Is moving up as expensive as it seems like on the outside? If you wanted to move from 9 to 6 or 9 to 5, like, it's, we all think that that's super expensive. If the calls you're having, would that be a pretty expensive proposition?
Well, I think you just saw the Buffalo trade. So they moved 3 spots and they got a 2nd round pick. So, you know, it all depends what what player and what value, and then, you know, that all makes it. I mean, they got ahead of it, obviously, and did it today. You know, we would probably be in a position where we'd want to see how the draft is unfolding. If we're going to give up something, we want to make sure we get the exact pick we would want.
So do you have to – because teams know different situations. I mean, obviously, every team knows the Aginla connection. Like, do you have to be wary of teams trying to dangle carrots and trying to throw you off the scent and things like that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, everybody's playing the game, and we're all kind of just working through. And what is the value for the players that we have? Like I said, you know, we like the list of 11, and we think that's a real solid list. So we're happy with getting in and to give up – you know, if you had to give up that late second or first round pick of the second pick of yours, you know, that's a big ask, because we really like a group of players there too. You know, is it for us to make as many picks as possible and get the players that we like? You know, maybe there's an opportunity with the seconds that I have to move up into higher up into the first round with the 28 pick. So those are all the scenarios. It's when you have a lot of picks, it's more fun, and it's there's a lot more maybe horse trading back and forth.
Safe to say, if you were to move up, it would be more likely with that 28 pick to move up a few spots there.
Again, what is the price to move up from 9? You know, I it's going to be very expensive, so it's probably easier to move up a little bit later in the draft at 28. Maybe we can move up if we have a player that we really think is a difference maker on our list, then we'll try to jump up there.
Is that what it comes down to, kind of like watching as the draft plays out? You're like, geez, we don't think our guy is going to make it past this pick. Now it's time to pounce.
Yeah, I mean, as you get closer, like, you get calls, hey, if would you be willing to move back to this if our player's there? And then when our player's gone, you know, like, they'll call, our player's gone now, we're going to stay pat. Okay, no problem. So that's kind of how it goes. But they kind of cue that up because you only have 3 minutes.
Yeah.
And then it's even busier in the second day. So, you know, you kind of say, talk to teams, would they be willing to move up or down, and get kind of a general idea of what it would cost.
You didn't have this many picks last year in year one. You've got, after the first round, you've got 7 more picks and 6 in the next 3 rounds. Does it feel like you've got a little bit more currency to play with and you've got some things that you can do?
Definitely. You know, it gives you an opportunity to move up, or you can always move back.
Yep.
You know, if you feel like, okay, there's not, right now isn't the right time, we move back. Maybe it's move a pick to next year for someone this year. Those are ways to do it too. You know, if you felt like, hey, there wasn't the exact guy you wanted, you know, maybe we trade a pick for next year for the pick. Someone hasn't had many picks this year. We'd like to get into the draft. Okay, perfect. You know, make a change.
The other thing is, you're fine if you make all 9 selections. So you don't leave a draft saying, damn, we made all our picks, right?
No, not at all. I mean, that's the thing. We don't feel like we have to, you know, a lot of our work was done during the year to accumulate all these picks. So we're happy with the picks. You know, we're excited. If we make all of the picks, that's a win for us too. You know, if we can move, you know, we're just going to do whatever we feel is the best for the overall group.
You feel, you go back a year ago and you had that entire storm with this report coming about, he's not coming back and he doesn't want to come back. You made the Toffoli trade. This time around, it's just focused on this draft. Like, you don't have to worry about those types of things. Is it a little less hectic this time around?
It has been a big time, yeah. It's, you know, I think if the Markstrom deal hadn't have been done, that probably would have been the number one topic. So, yeah, really it's been coming in here. It's more just about getting ready for the draft. We have lots of picks. This is the way we've been dialed in for a long, long time, that this is such an important, you know, really 3-year span. And even, I mean, let's be honest, last year with Hanzig and Moran, they're all big every year. But again, with the way the season went, with where we're moving, every draft class we had, but these next 3 years, you know, I think because we have the 2 first round picks in each of them, kind of is we're setting ourselves up.
Do you find that the conversations that you're having with other teams are focused more on this draft as opposed to guys on your roster and stuff like that?
Yeah, definitely. It's you know, last year was Lindholm and Hanifin, and it was lots of calls on that.
Yeah.
Nothing. And really, there was no even talk about moving in the draft.
Yeah.
Really, I was like, oh, I thought for sure, is there any chance to move up or down? everybody was pretty set with their picks, and you saw that in the first round. I mean, nobody moved. And, right. and you've already seen Buffalo move.
Yep.
You know, so they moved down. So I do think this year's, like, even before, I think weeks ago, we said there is opportunities move up and down in this draft. And you've seen it. And actually, you've seen it twice because the Islanders did it with Chicago.
That's
so
right.
there is some movement probably this year.
I do have to ask you about the name that everybody is buzzing about. Tejas Ginla. We know that. If he ends up being your guy, the entire team is fully sure. Like, there's no added pressure just because of the name, right?
No. I mean, you know, like, it's Jerome's son, so of course, is, you know, having Tej's name out there. But again, we're just, you know, we have the list in order. We're just going off the list.
Yep.
And then just get it right. Yep. Get it right. And the name's the name. You know, it could be you or me on the list. If that's the name, that's the name.
So, and I know I've asked you about this before, but maybe important to reiterate, because on the outside, it's like, oh, man, the Flames, they got to come home with this and that, and they got to get this draft right. Well, in your room, like 20 feet over there, you're kind of, yeah, of course, like that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to nail this draft, right?
Yeah, we're, you know, dial in. We want people that our scouts want to be Calgary Flames, and we want to get them in the right order. And, you know, it's not absolute science. We wish we could just say, oh, these guys are the ones that are going to be home runs and we're going to take them all. But, you know, there's lots of stuff happening. There's injuries. There's different things. There's just, you know, off-ice issues and things can go awry. So there are 18-year-old kids that still have a lot of growing to do and maturing to do. So, you know, it's not an exact science. So, you know, with that, though, we want to do all the background, all the work, get the player down. Analytics, how do these all compare, and put them all together, and then feel very comfortable when the list is there, when we start working our way down, it's in the right order.
You've got your pro guys here as well, getting ready for Monday in free agency. How's that? Is that, or those lists, are they pretty set as well?
Yeah, you know, those are lists, and some guys have been re-signing with teams, and some guys, you know, so, I mean, you definitely want to have dial in to guys that you would have targets on coming to July 1st. So you want to kind of get those in order. We do have a lot of guys under contract. I mean, we do have a lot of players. And again, there's not a lot of room on this roster to be going in and bringing in guys. But, you know, we're always looking to kind of help and add a piece if we can, for sure.
Are you safe to say, like, I know there's a lot of talk about, well, they got $20+ million in cap space. Term the most important thing that you'll be watching, is that safe to say?
Yeah, it doesn't, you know, I think, you know, where we are right now, trying to get some young guys in the lineup, but we're trying to support them with good veterans. So, you know, I think, yeah, we're not in the 7-year deals. I mean, it just right now doesn't make sense. You know, you're always looking for the deal that works for the time being, but also allows your young players to kind of develop and get some opportunities. Because you saw it was already impossible. Turned our whole season around when they came up. You know, you'd have to say with our defense, with everything that we had, with Markstrom, with we didn't have a great start. But when the young kids came up, we played better. And maybe we had some times we were up and down. We had injuries, different things going on through the year. But, you know, I think it is, you know, we talked about it. It is key to have see these young guys and but not rush them. When they're ready, bring them. You know, but they're going to get an opportunity.
Are you is there, like, obviously you might need to add a net with losing a goalie? Is that maybe one of the areas that you're looking at?
For sure. I mean, you know, you'd like to add more depth in net. You know, you just see it even in the playoffs. If you don't have 3 goalies, 4 goalies, 5 goalies, it's one of those positions now where, you know, you used to see some guys play all year, one guy play all year. It's not the way it is anymore. And especially the way they play with the traffic coming around the net, you know, you need to have that depth. So that will be a position we're looking at.
You ready to go? Like, you feel ready, or are you still like, hey, a lot of stuff to do?
Ready to go. You know what? It's been a long year. It wasn't the way we wanted to finish, but now we're here, and I'm excited to get on that stage and make a pick tomorrow. A couple picks.
Yeah. There you go. That is Craig Conroy, the general manager of the Calgary Flames. Had a chance to chat with him a little earlier on Thursday. You know, obviously not writing off the possibility of potentially moving up, potentially moving down.
Right.
Because that's, why would you at this point close the door on anything. It may not be in the cards for them. Feels like if a player that they really want, they feel isn't going to get past a certain spot, maybe they'll become a little bit more aggressive. I feel like, just based on everybody that I've spoken to, I feel like number 28 overall is maybe the spot that they're a little more aggressive in trying to move up on. But I mean, there's talk that Montreal's number 5 might be available. There's talk that, you know, Winnipeg might be trying to get back into the top 10. There's all kinds of stuff out there that might make it a little bit more, or might make the Flames a little bit more urgent in trying to move up. But I feel like if they were to do so, it would be number 28.
Yeah, and for me, that makes the most sense as if you're looking to target one particular pick and trying to boost your odds of getting a player that you like, moving from 28 to, you know, somewhere in the early 20s or even the late teens affords you the option of having more of a choice as to who you want. And in all likelihood, that player is going to have a higher upside than what you're going to see at number 28. Whereas when you're looking at number 9, this draft is so wide open. We've heard Craig Conroy talk about it. We've heard players talk about it. We've certainly heard media talk about it. Once you get past 2, maybe number 3, you've got to run on players from 3 to 11, 12, 13 that you could literally just draw names out of a hat and have just as equal an opportunity of getting them right as you or I sitting here trying to mock draft out how the top end of the first round is going to go. So if you're the Calgary Flames at 9, you're just as likely to get a quality NHLer as you are at number 4 or 5. So when you look at moving up, what you're doing is you're just spending draft capital to ensure you are guaranteed the one guy that you want the most, but that doesn't necessarily mean that guy is going to be better than whoever would eventually be picked at number 9. You're just getting the preference. You're jumping the queue, if you will, in order to dictate better
right
which player you have.
And the other thing that I think is really important and is really going to be, and it's not so much focused on this weekend, but I mean, yeah, the Flames are going to be looking to be somewhat active in free agency. But I think, and right there, I made sure to ask Craig the question again, and that is about term. They're not going to be going out and looking for Steven Stamkos or Jonathan Marchessault or some of the big name UFAs out there. They're not in a position to be giving away 7-year, 6-year
right
deals in free agency. Yes, I think the Flames on Monday or after Monday, once free agency opens on Monday, I think they will be looking at signing a goaltender. We're going to get into goaltending with Jordan Sigalette in just a minute here, but I do think they'll be looking to add goaltending. I think about an Eric Comrie, a Devin Cooley, somebody like that as an organizational piece, kind of an organizational three that's a nice cushion or safety net to have if Dustin Wolf or Dan Vladar falters and you need to go in a different direction. I mean, I know Cooley's numbers weren't great last year, but especially down the stretch, but there's a lot of people. I know Kevin Woodley's talked a lot about how much potential
yep
he has. Eric Comrie's a very, very seasoned pro that I think would be a nice fit here. So those are just two names that are interesting to me. The Flames might target when it comes to goaltending. And then they need defense. We don't know what's going to happen with Oliver Shillington. I mean, I think there's enough exposure to at the very least be ready to be ready to pivot away if Shillington does go to market. Right now, they're pretty thin on left side defense. So even if Shillington does re-sign, I think adding another left side defenseman is going to be important.
Yeah, when you just look at the organizational depth chart right now on defense for the Calgary Flames, excusing the likes of Solovyov and Kuznetsov and Poirier, who may be knocking on the door. We certainly saw the first two get games in at the NHL level this season, and it'll be a very important summer development-wise for them to put themselves into a position to compete for a full-time NHL roster spot. But when you look at who's is already in that bubble, you've got Rasmus Anderson, Mackenzie Weegar. You've got Ball now, who came over in the Jacob Markstrom deal. You've got Pahal, and apologies because I'm forgetting the fifth now off the top of my head.
Joel Hanley,
yep. Thank you very much. That is not an organizational strength as it stands right now in terms of that depth. So I could see, as you mentioned, even if Shillington is to re-sign with the Calgary Flames, they've still got work to do on that blue line. And for me, that would be a priority, as you mentioned, alongside the goaltending situation.
The goaltending is fascinating because will the Flames select a goaltender in this year's draft on Friday? Most likely Saturday. I don't think they're taking one in the first round.
I don't think anybody's taking one in the first round.
But do they draft a goalie on Saturday? They drafted one last year in Igor Igorov, which is the way you say it. You'll hear it in this interview with Jordan Sigalette that we're just about to hear. Had a chance to chat with the director of goaltending of the Calgary Flames, Jordan Sigalette, about draft approach, about free agency approach, Dan Vladar, Dustin Wolf, and more. Here's Jordan Sigalette of the Flames.
What goes into kind of getting the goalie list set as you move into this weekend? Because that's kind of what you're tasked with, is coming up with some different names. What goes into that over the course of a year?
Yeah, it's a lengthy process. You start watching guys usually the year before, and then you see how far they've come along, you know, over that summer and into the next season. And it's a lot of video targeting guys that you want to get out and see live, and then you kind of try and watch them start of the year, middle of the year, end of the season, again, to see what their development path is like, how much they're playing, how much they've improved. And then as the season winds down, you start to sort out your list, and you start interviewing guys, and that's kind of, you know, bumps guys up and down a little bit too for me. And then once I get my top 10 to 15 together, I'll have Jason LaBarbera and Mackenzie Skapski watch them as well and kind of give me their ranking and rating and projection of each guy, and the three of us kind of put that final list together.
So you last year selected Yegor Yegorov and had a great first year, kind of D plus 1 year in the organization. So how do you get the scouting group, Craig Conroy, like when it's time to take a goalie or you want them to take a goalie, like how do you get it to the point where it's like, okay, we're going to select a goaltender with this pick?
Yeah, it kind of comes down to who's available when we pick and how hard I'm banging the table for a goalie versus one of our other area scouts banging the table for a player that's still available. And you know, sometimes before the draft, we'll target, say maybe we'll get a late goalie this year, or if we haven't picked one high in a while, you know, then sometimes we'll go a little bit higher. It just all kind of depends who's available when, and, you know, if there's a guy there that I really want and don't think that we'll get later on.
How does this year's goalie class shape up? What's your overall kind of feel on that?
No, it's good. Every year is different. A lot of times it depends how your stagger is in your system, too, whether you want to go get a guy that's going to go the NCAA route where you have more time, or get a guy, you know, that's over in Europe or Russia that's going to have time to marinate over there, or you grab a guy out of the Central Hockey League that, you know, you're going to have to sign in a few years. It just kind of depends where you're at as an organization. And, you know, there's, you know, 5, 6, 7 guys that are going to go in the first few rounds this year. I don't see any first round goalies this year, but definitely a lot of guys with upside that you could take early, or there's still some guys you could take with that 6th round pick that, you know, are a little bit more projects but have some mm-hmm. upside as well.
How do you feel about the overall kind of ladder that you've got organizationally in terms of guys being ready at certain spots? You feel like that's starting to shape up the way you want?
Yeah, no, I like where we're at. You know, you got Arseniy Sergeyev that's going to play at least one more year at Penn State this year. Could go back for a 4th after that. We'll see where he's at. And then obviously having Igor Yegorov over in Russia. He had a really good year after only playing, you know, 5 games a year before. So I like the path that both those guys are on, and, you know, would like to add another one to the mix at this year's draft, but we'll wait and see.
Do you how hard were you pounding the table for Yegorov? That's how we're saying it. How hard were you pounding the table for him last year?
No, he was a guy I really liked, and he was a little bit of an unknown. Not many people had seen because of his limited playing time. Mm-hmm. He was in a system with 3 really good goalies, and so he didn't get to play that much. But when he did, you know, he played well, and I loved his tools. And just talking to people over there, I knew he was going to play more the following season, and he should take the net over this year totally, and, you know, hoping to get some games in the second pro league over there. But his interview was outstanding last year. Like, his English was perfect, a smart kid with, you know, a lot of fire under him. And I just thought it was a low risk taking him in the 6th round, and I pushed hard to get him and was happy that Todd agreed to do so.
So goaltending-wise, obviously a big shift this summer as Jacob gets moved to New Jersey. I guess, first of all, how are we feeling about Dan Vladar and his recovery from the hip surgery?
No, I spoke to Dan last week, and he was feeling really good, and he was still staying off the ice at that point. I think he could get on, but he was just going to, you know, play it safe and wait till the first week of July before hopping on, and he feels way better, which will, you know, it'll show in his play, I'm sure, this coming season. And obviously exciting time for Dustin too. Not a ton of experience between the both, but I love both as people and as goalies, and it's going to be a good growth year for both of them, and, you know, push each other and battle it out.
If that ends up being your NHL tandem, what is kind of the or the benefits of having two guys that don't have a ton of experience kind of pushing one another?
Yeah, I think it's good because both guys are hungry. Both guys want to prove they can be a number one goalie in the league, and that door is open right now. And, you know, for Dustin, he got a good taste last season, and I think he'll take a big step this summer coming into training camp. And he'll be excited and, you know, come in guns a-blazing. And even though he doesn't have a ton of experience, you know, and people always doubt him because of his size, you know, I think having that taste of the games he had last season is going to go a long way moving into this year.
How did you feel like he performed as he got more playing time and kind of got to split the workload there down the stretch with Jacob?
Yeah, I think early it was hard for him just because he was going up and down and couldn't really get in a rhythm. And, you know, once he was up after Dan got his surgery, you know, he could see him get a little bit more comfortable. And it's going to be a learning process for him. But he's an adaptable creature, and he's done it at every level and proved people wrong. And I don't see it any different at this level.
What is the kind of rest of the pro depth chart shaping up? If you've got Dustin and Dan at the NHL level, how's it starting to shape up behind them as you start to look at the Wranglers?
No, it's in a good spot right now. We just signed Walter Ignatiu out of Sweden, and I like his upside as a 24-year-old, so he'll come over and he'll battle it out with Connor Murphy and Matt Radomski. And Connor Murphy had a lot of good games for us with the Wranglers at the end of the season and showed a lot of upside, so it's been really promising to see the steps he's taken. And Mackenzie Scaps, he's done a great job with those guys at that level, and so that's exciting. And then depending on what we do, if we're signing a different number two or a different number three, you know, we have that hole there that we need to fill, and we have our list together, and we've been, you know, going through all those guys, and we'll make a decision, you know, here before July 1st.
And that's kind of the last angle. What goes into, from your department, kind of submitting guys that you might target for July 1st to add to the organization?
Yeah, like, depending what we do, if Wolfie's in the NHL, you know, you're going to want a guy with some NHL experience or at least some NHL upside. There's a lot of different routes you could go. You could go with an older guy that's, you know, maybe been a two in the past that might, you know, take that three seat this year just because there's only so many seats at the table in the NHL. Or you can go with a guy that, you know, maybe has a little bit of experience and still younger and has room to pop and still become that NHL goalie. So got a couple different lists in that regards, and it's just going to come down to what myself and management come to agreement on.
That list set, you know, obviously your draft list for this weekend is pretty set, but is that free agency list pretty good to go as well?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you're always moving around a little bit just from, you know, calling different people, whether you're calling former teammates or goalie coaches, just getting feedback on guys, you know, find out there's some injury history, things like that. You're gonna move guys around a little bit, but for the most part, I think it's set.
That is Jordan Sigalet, the Flames' director of goaltending. And, you know, I always find it interesting, especially, you know, the Flames are one of a handful of teams that have a, you know, very, very set goaltending department. And, you know, it's always interesting to me to see how the Flames go about adding goaltenders, especially at the draft, because Sigalet's group works not independently, but separately
right
from the rest of the scouting group. And then they kind of bring it all together come draft time. And I always find it fascinating the way that he's like, okay, you know, third round, fourth round, hey, this is where one of my guys, like one of the guys we really want, is going to be there. So you know that whenever the Flames select a goaltender, that Jordan Sigalette has been absolutely hammering Todd Button and Craig Conroy with, now's the time to do it. Now
give me this. Give me this
guy. Give me this guy. And so that'll be really interesting to see on Saturday how that plays itself out.
Yeah, it wouldn't shock me one bit if Jordan Sigalette is handed over a pick in either that third or fourth round. Again, the Calgary Flames have multiple picks in each of the first four rounds, and then the number 170 pick, which will fall in the sixth round. Always curious, because like you can go back to last year, and Igorov, who was a third string MHL goalie who hadn't hit double digits in games, and Jordan Sigalette found him. And so it's anytime the Calgary Flames draft a goalie, you know the due diligence was done, and you know it was Jordan Sigalette going, you have to give me this pick because I need this guy now. He won't be there later, and I really, really want him. So that's one of like the sub-storylines that I'll be watching for from a Calgary Flames perspective on day two, where it's like, all right, where does Siggy get his goalie?
Yep.
Because that's something that I'm always fascinated
in. And they've got seven picks on day two. Pretty decent chance they do get themselves a goalie. But yeah, I'm really interested to see how that plays itself out. And then there's the pro side, like the immediate side. I think you can almost book it that they'll sign a goalie.
Yeah.
Whether it's Monday, Tuesday, whenever, you can pretty much book it that they'll add another pro goalie that has some sort of NHL experience between now and, I don't know, the second week of July. You know, I've thrown out a couple of names. I've thrown out the name of Chris Drieger, Devin Cooley, Eric Comrie. All three of those guys, I think, fit the bill. Cooley's the one that I'm most interested in. I think Devin Cooley would be a really interesting fit. I know that goalie people are really high on him and think that there's a lot there. He's still relatively young, 26, 27 years old, so still relatively young as a goaltender goes. Showed some really nice flashes in San Jose before. I mean, look, you're playing in front of that or behind that team. Have fun. So the numbers definitely kind of dropped off last year, especially as the year went on. But you know, those are just a few names that I think you could absolutely see be joining the Flames between, you know, now and sometime early in free agency, because they need and that guy would be what you would call, I think, an organizational three.
Right.
It would probably they'd be up front with it. You know, you're probably American League to start, and then we'll see how it plays out. Is Dustin Wolf a full-time NHLer? The answer is yes. Well, then great. Is Dan Vladar fully healthy? Is Dan Vladar going to be able to play at a high level all year long? If the answer is yes, then great. But if either one of those answers is no, well, then you've got a guy, or injuries,
right.
You've got a guy like Cooley that you're comfortable with coming in and playing, similar to what Dustin Wolf was for them last year when they had Markstrom and Vladar.
Yeah, and we both heard Craig Conroy say that goaltending was going to be a priority, because you're right. That's you're one groin pull away from being in the NHL if you're that number three, or if you want to call it a 2A, 2B situation, whatever it happens to be. Fact of the matter is you're one tweak away from needing to go into your reserves. And if you don't have anybody behind the tandem of Dustin Wolf and Dan Vladar who have NHL experience or are ready to take on NHL experience, then you're going to be in a little bit of trouble, and you're going to be relying on whichever one remains healthy, because you just don't have somebody in that spot that you feel comfortable backing up whoever may be remaining. So it's going to be a key signing for the Calgary Flames. And if you can find somebody that skews a little bit on the younger side, as you mentioned, all the better as well.
So Jordan Sigalette, Craig Conroy, thanks to both for chatting with us here on Flames Talk. Thanks to Peter Hanlon of the Flames for help setting that up. As we continue along from the 2024 NHL Draft in Las Vegas, it's Steinberg and Aaron Vickers, and our coverage is brought to you by four great sponsors, including All Kind Door Services Limited, your go-to service company for the last 35 years, offering 24-hour emergency service for all your door repairs. Anything that swings, slides, or rolls, visit All Kind Door Services.com.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, continuing along on this Thursday from Vegas, Steinberg Vickers and our 2024 NHL draft coverage, which continues for Calgary Lock and Safe, who also, of course, bring you the Sports Drive, which we are smack dab in the middle of right now on a Thursday. We heard from Craig Conroy and Jordan Sigalette, General Manager, Director of Goaltending of the Flames, earlier this hour. And now let's focus in on the draft class itself. Let's hear from Director of Amateur Scouting, Todd Button, because, Vix, as you know, you run a scouting service at FC Hockey. You're the Grand Master.
I always just love listen to what you come up with for my title. Every time it's different. Every time it seems to get more flamboyant, and it just... I digress. Go ahead.
You are FC Hockey's El Presidente.
There we are.
So you know how much, you know, you compare notes with Stephen Ellis and Cam Robinson and Chris Peters and all the other scouting services. And you know where your variances are on the outside. And you also know where your variances are with the teams and how different things are from team to team, right? Like it's and especially this year.
Yeah, this one is going to be wild. It's going to be off the charts. In a regular sort of, if you can call any sort of draft year a regular draft year, there's a lot of unpredictability, pardon me, and there's a lot of variance from team to team and what their lists look like. And teams aren't producing 300-player long lists like we are at FC Hockey. They're producing a much shorter list, and then they break it out and branch it out into shorter sort of regional list that they'll go, okay, which guy wants to stand up at the table and say, okay, this is the time to take my guy once they're beyond their list of Conroy. Craig Conroy said he had about 55 on his list this year, and then you break it out to the regional. But you also have an idea of how things are going to unfold when you get to the draft floor. There is no consensus externally. There is no consensus internally. There is nobody that is willing to go on record to predict how this draft will unfold, because that is just going to be a big swing and a even bigger miss, because it's not an exaggeration when I say this is the most unpredictable draft class I've come across in probably, well, I want to say this is our 16th year. I don't remember one being this sort of all over the board in terms of how the top half of the first round could unfold.
Let's hear from the Flames Director of Amateur Scouting. This is Todd Button. I had a chance to chat with him exclusively a little earlier on Thursday.
How are you feeling about your list? How are you feeling about everything leading up to Friday and Saturday?
Really excited, like pumped, like jacked. Like it's... You know, 8 picks in the first 4 rounds, and I'm not dismissing the 6th round pick, but that's the bulk of our work, and this is a combination of a season long of traveling across the globe trying to get these guys in order and evaluate them and rank them. So our group's pumped, they're engaged, like we're ready to go.
It's always like Christmas Eve around this time for your group. Doesn't matter if you got 2 picks or 9 picks, but does it feel a little like, are you even that much more energized with 9?
For sure we are, because in 28 too, and the multiple picks in the second, third, and fourth, because, you know, like you've been around it a lot. When you're here and you have 2 picks in the first 100 and the first one's maybe in the 40s, that's a lot of work you do, knowing that realistically you're not going to get to move up. So you try and keep, that's why I say engage, our guys are engaged. You try to stay engaged, you try and motivate them, you try and keep it, but human nature is like, we know we're not getting in the top 30, you know. So that engagement, It provides energy for the whole group, and I think it shows management like these guys are invested. So I think having more picks absolutely is a different vibe around the meetings and around the whole draft than if you only have, like I said, 2 in the first 100 picks or so.
Well, and for your staff, like with 9 picks, I mean, day 2, you got 2 on day 1 and then 7 on day 2, like your group is going to be going a mile a minute. You almost prepare them for, hey, this is going to be a little bit different. Like you got to be dialed the whole time.
We usually are. Tree was really good, and even Connie last year in his first year, he made sure we were at the table, that we weren't just waiting to cross names out, like we were talking, and it was more in groups of 10 or 15. Okay, what's going on? Nothing. See anything? Do you want to move up? In this case, we got to be ready, like first right at the drop of the mic, and then as soon as the that picks over, we're going to be monitoring really quickly to see 28, and then same thing, come back tonight, we reorganize a bit, and then day 2 is going to go, you know, fast day 2 goes, you don't have as much time, so we're going to be we're going to have our brains on in full mode at the table, maybe a couple Red Bulls,
right, which is good, a few coffees. And you're always ready to move up or move down, you're always, the staff's always ready to be nimble, but with so many extra picks, are you even more prepared for a move up, move down scenario?
I think the way we do our list, we've always done it, is to just do the list, not worry about the strategy. And then after the list is done, then you get into the more strategy. So we have levels of players. Say we have 28, say we have 20 players for 28 guys. Then you can, that's when the move up or move down comes. And then with the analytics department, what makes value, what makes sense mathematically for picks, two picks for one pick or moving down. So I don't sense a move down, but you never know what happens. Yep. Maybe something happens where we get an extra pick next year. So there's all, we got to be ready for everything. But for us, the scouts, it's more about having the names attached than just numbers.
Let's talk a little bit about this draft class. With so many defensemen that could be gone in the first 10, 15, and it doesn't feel like there's a ton separating them, what's like? How do you separate them? What's the difference for you? What are some of the things that will make a decision when you've got so many players that are close together?
It's to be honest, it's not easy. And for me personally, we just keep going over it and rehashing it and trying to go through history to see what's more important. Is there a style of player type that's more important? Or is there one that's more rare? And we've used our analytics group, did a big project this year about 3 months ago. You know, Michael Charron led it, and it wasn't eye-opening. It was what we thought. So it's separating them. And it's still hard because if you have two different distinct player types and you can see like the Stanley Cup champions both have one of each, not just this year but going back, and you say, okay, so now you still have to pick one, you only get to pick one of them. So it's hard, but that's what we have to do. And we talk it out. There's been a lot of discussions, and you have a lot of experience in the room with Don and obviously Connie and Dave Nonis and Brad Pascal. So there's a lot of experience to help us sort it out. And at the end of the day, we just got to put it in order. We like to get all nine.
The idea that this could be, or there could be, a run on defense here, does that maybe open up some value picks at forward, perhaps, the way that you look at the, especially in the top 10?
I don't think early it does. I think our list is set, and we're going to follow it, cross names off, and whoever next, that's who we're going to pick. So, but to answer your question a little more deeply, if you were in the 18 or 19, yeah, and I think you're going to see movement. There's already been a few trades up.
Absolutely.
And I think, I'm not going to speak for those teams, but you know, maybe that's why, because they see that they want to get in position to take one of the top six or seven defensemen in the draft.
What type of player do you anticipate you'll be getting with your first pick at ninth overall?
I think we're going to get an eventual guy that can contribute at a high level offensively or defensively, or preferably both. But you know, the skill part, the goal scoring part, the offensive part, it's hard to come by. And to be able to have players that can shut down those high-end guys, that's equally valuable. That's why I say, you talk about the different types. So we're going to get a good player. I'm not even worried about that. Like, I know we're going to get a good player. By default, we're going to get a good player. And it's going to be a player that's going to contribute to winning. And, you know, Matt Brown's done a lot of his mental performance stuff. And we also think we're going to get a guy that's going to contribute to culture.
So the whole idea of, this is not a very strong draft, not a very strong first round, you don't buy into that, do you?
I did early. I thought it, you know, it was at the start of the year, but so many different names have emerged that I wasn't aware of, or our staff wasn't aware of, all over the world, has really made that not true to our evaluation right now. And I'm not just talking about nine. I'm talking about right into the third and fourth round. We think we're going to really, really contribute to our prospect base.
When you take a look at the different tiers, what is number 28 showing you right now?
We're going to get a really good player. It's at the top, you're probably, you know, more heavy defense. There's still defensemen there at 28 possibly, but it's probably switched as far as like probably 65, 35 forwards. But we, again, at 28, that's a long way to cross names off your list. So we're going to get a good player. That's why I say we're excited. Even we're talking about 41 and stuff. And I just like, the group we talked this morning, and like, please let's just keep those three for sure, and then we can start strategizing or moving up. But we for sure we want to make sure we at least make those three picks.
Okay.
So you're actually feeling pretty good about the depth of this year's class too, hey?
Yeah, absolutely. It's for me, it's the staff who's out there. They're the ones beating the bushes and traveling all over the place and going to the rinks and leaving their families, you know, on a Sunday night or Saturday night. And for me, I want to advocate for them. And so I can tell you, like, as a group, we're into the 60s, like top 60, 62, I think it was. But for them, that's when I want to advocate for them, because now I know who has a real strong feeling for one of the players in their areas. And that's important for me, that they have say and that they feel like they're valued.
How does the goaltending factor in? And I know Jordan's group is always doing a lot of work. So how does your group decide, hey, you know what, this is the time to go goaltender, if you decide to do that, or in the past when you've done that?
Well, Jordan does unbelievable work with background and information, and he has a really keen sense of where guys are going to go. So we take his list, and then the area guy, wherever the goalie is, we talk about them, and then we went through our list this morning, and we slotted them into an area. And we do it the same way without putting the goalie list, but it's separate from the original list.
Yep.
But I know, like, if it gets, I don't even know what the number was, say it gets to our third round pick at 70, and I know that I'll be able to go over to Jordan now because he's got three guys at that pick or whatever.
Yep, okay. So what now? So here we are. We're talking on Thursday. The draft is Friday night. You're pretty much set on your list. What could change things? Like, what in the past, what are things that could slightly alter a list that you've been working for a year on?
Not much, to be honest with you. Not much. It's the only thing that would change is if there was a trade. If Connie moved up or moved down or moved the pick for a player or whatever. But that's why we try and stay away from that part, so we have our list in order.
So you feel confident that if they were to be like, hey, we're moving up, we're actually going to start it right now, like, you'd feel confident going right up and sitting down and working off your list this instant?
I would love to go right, like, in 2 hours right over there and let's get this thing going, yeah.
There you go. That is Director of Amateur Scouting, Todd Button. A little bit of insight on the Flames draft strategy, a little bit of insight on what the Flames are thinking going into Friday and Saturday, where they will, as of right now, have 9 picks, 2 on Friday, 7 more in rounds 2, 3, 4, and 6 on Saturday.
Just listening to Todd Button there, the vibe, and I don't know if it came through the radio the same way it came through my headphones, but he sounded like he was a child on Christmas Eve, just ready to get going.
You should have seen him. He was vibrating when he was talking to me at the hotel. I keep wanting to say what the Flames hotel is. I won't do that.
Probably wise.
But at the hotel in the conference room area that we were at, he was vibrating. Couldn't wipe the smile off that guy's face.
From my perspective, that comes through the radio waves there, and just how energetic and how sort of buzzing he kind of feels. And it's not just because he has number 9, and it's not even just because he has number 28 to play with as well. As mentioned, the Flames have multiple picks in each of the first 4 rounds. And you don't have to think back too long ago to when the Calgary Flames would come to a draft with, you know, 3 picks, 4 picks, and really use that draft capital to try to bolster the current roster. Well, now that's sort of the inverse. And Todd Button and his scouting staff now have an opportunity to put a significant imprint on the blueprint for the Calgary Flames.
The imprint on the blueprint.
I don't even know if that makes sense or if it works, but you seem to like it. I'll take it.
I liked it. That's all that matters. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. As we start to wrap up this hour on Flames Talk, thanks to Shan. Thanks to Cam, our outstanding producers, as always. And this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. When it comes to your business, knowing your property's secure is better than wondering who's getting in. Get peace of mind at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.